Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, joined by my colleague Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we're getting ready for week five here. Packers against the Cowboys down in Dallas, a rematch of last January's NFC divisional playoff. It'll be, I believe, 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Correct. From AT&T Stadium in Dallas. And this is a team the Packers are starting to get rather familiar with, because this will now be the third meeting basically in a 12-month span following a regular season meeting last October and then the playoff meeting in January. And here we are in week five, and the Packers and the Cowboys are at it again.
Yeah, so much gets made out of the Packers and Seahawks seeing each other as often as they do. But even during our pre-production meeting, you and I were kind of bantering about, I mean, just how many times these teams have seen each other going back the last three, four seasons even.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of meetings between these two ball clubs. So the Packers have played the Cowboys down at AT&T Stadium. The Cowboys have been up here at Lambeau Field. Playoff games, all these different implications, and once again, here they are again taking on the Cowboys down in Irving.
Yeah, and really,
Arlington.
Yeah, and really, it's the games from last year that matter most in terms of getting ready for the Cowboys personnel, because
right.
Last year was the arrival of Dak Prescott, the rookie quarterback, Zeke Elliott, the rookie running back. Now in their second seasons as the focal points of the Dallas Cowboys offense. And the Cowboys, you know, they've put up their share of points, really, except for the one game against the Denver Broncos, where they had a rough offensive day against that Broncos defense on the road. But still, all in all, Zeke Elliott isn't quite putting up the numbers that, you know, to follow up that rookie season when he was the NFL's rushing champion. You wonder, you know, how long it will take them to figure it out, though, because coming off of a home loss last weekend, this is going to be a very, very highly motivated Dallas team that absolutely will not want to fall below 500 at 2-3.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is I think this is a Dallas team that really understands they need to start defending their home turf. Certainly, you go back to the playoff game last year, they lose there, and with the situation being what it was, and the Packers coming through at the end with the Jared Cook catch and the Mason Crosby field goals.
Right.
Now you go into this season, they get off to kind of a sluggish start offensively. As you said, Ezekiel Elliott, right now, 277 rushing yards, two touchdowns, his longest carry for only 30 yards, which compared to last year with how many he broke free,
right.
And then 3.6 yards per carry. Some transition for them a little bit on the offensive line. You look at Ronald Leary, left in free agency, I believe, signed with Denver. Doug Free retires, so now you have Lyle Collins moving out to right tackle. So I think it's still a very deep offensive front. It's still one of the best in football, but maybe doesn't have that same cachet that it had in recent years. And offensively, trying to find that running game for Dak Prescott and to get him set up like they did last season.
Yeah, when you look at that game last week, or just this past Sunday, I guess I should say, against the Rams, Cowboys frustrated a little bit in the sense that they put up 30 points offensively.
Right.
There certainly wasn't a lack of issues on offense, but when it came right down to it, the final drive, you know, the game is on Dak Prescott's shoulder to drive and get a touchdown down by 5 points down the stretch, and they weren't able to get it done. And suddenly, this team that was 13-3 a year ago, and actually 13-1 against everybody but the New York Giants, who beat
right.
them twice in their own division. This is a team that suddenly has two losses through the first month of the season. This is not the position they expected to be in.
No, not at all. And you look at Prescott last year, 459 passing attempts, had only four interceptions. This year, 143, already has three. Something I mentioned, I actually talked about in our insider inbox this past week on the website. People really get infatuated with young quarterbacks, and they get infatuated with the idea of them coming in and really having a big game. Deshaun Watson did it this past week for the Houston Texans. But the one thing you have to understand is very few guys outside of maybe an exclusive group of Hall of Famers like an Aaron Rodgers are really just going to dominate every single week and always give you that consistent performance. There's going to be ebbs and flows, ups and downs. I think that's what the Cowboys are experiencing right now with Prescott. By no means is he having a down year, 90 passer rating, doing everything to keep his team in the ballgame. But then when you mentioned trying to develop those game-winning drives, trying to lead those comebacks, that's a different animal. And
yep.
It's something that I think all young quarterbacks somewhat struggle with. Still only 24 years old, mistakes are going to be made, but there's no more Tony Romo. I mean, he has to be the guy now, and I think he understands that.
Yeah, we saw last January, I give Prescott a heck of a lot of credit, because the Packers jumped out to a 21-3 lead in that playoff game.
Right.
He brought the Cowboys back, got it back to 28-28. Then after the first long Mason Crosby field goal. He leads a drive to get the Cowboys back into field goal range. Obviously, they were hoping to continue that drive and potentially score a touchdown to win the playoff game then and there. But he gets his team in position for a field goal that ties it up, and then it's Aaron Rodgers' magic at the end that wins it. I go back to the point that you made, though, about the Cowboys and defending their home turf, because we've talked about it here with the Packers at Lambeau Field. That stadium in Dallas is huge. It's a huge crowd. It's indoors. It's loud. There's an atmosphere. There's an environment there. And home games are games that the Cowboys really can't afford to let slip away, especially as competitive as their division is with what the Eagles are doing. I know the Giants are struggling right now, but certainly and the Redskins showing that they're no slouch in the NFC East.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's integral. It's so important. You and I were talking recently on this show about the Packers and being able to, you know, win your home games and how that sets you up for the rest of the season. Cowboys are looking to produce that. The thing I guess I'm looking for most in this offense, I did kind of mention that Elliott hasn't had an explosive play yet. I mean, Alfred Morris has. They do have a 70-yard carry already this season, so they are doing some things positive so far. But also Cole Beasley, getting him going, I think, is going to be a key. He's been really quiet so far. He's had some good games against the Packers.
Yeah.
One thing I'm keying in on going into this game, you have the home field. You have to get your offense out there. You have to get the ball moving. From the Packers' perspective, they have to stop it.
Yeah, and we'll switch gears here and talk a little bit about the Cowboys' defense after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there, and Wes, shifting gears to the Cowboys defense. As much as in Green Bay here, we're going to be paying attention to whether or not the Packers will get Mike Daniels back from injury to help defend against Zeke Elliott and perhaps get some interior pass rush against Dak Prescott. The similar story on the Cowboys side is whether or not Sean Lee, their middle linebacker, will be back, because
right.
You look at that game against the Rams last Sunday. The Cowboys' defense just doesn't look the same without number 50 in the middle of the field. They need him out there, and he's dealing with a hamstring injury right now. They're kind of talking about him, I guess, as day-to-day at this point.
Right, yeah, and you and I both know. I mean, every single hamstring injury in the history of the NFL, it's either day-to-day or it's week-to-week, because it's so difficult to judge soft muscle tissue injuries.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons they're so troublesome, is because you don't know when you can press go with these guys. Lee has had a history with these type of injuries.
Yep.
So the Cowboys obviously want to be cognizant of trying to keep him healthy for the long run. But getting back to your original point, this defense is different with him in the middle of the field. I've always been incredibly high on Sean Lee as a football player.
Me too.
He's a tenacious tackler. He gives you everything you want in terms of the coverage aspect of the position. He's a throwback. He really is. And he can play in a multitude of different ways. And you get back to the years, you know, they went with trying to fill in with Rolando McClain. They had some success with it. Other times they've struggled with trying to fill his spot. Whatever the case may be, no matter what the pass rushing numbers say, it comes back to Sean Lee and whether or not he's on the football field.
Yeah, he's a big part of that defense. And right now, from a statistical standpoint, it is the pass rush that is making the most noise
right. For
the Dallas Cowboys. You've got on that defensive line, DeMarcus Lawrence. What was it you told me before the cameras went on? Seven and a half sacks
in four games. So, keeping that in mind, I think he had eight for his career up until this season.
So he's only on pace for a 30-sack season to obliterate the NFL
very common
single season record. But This is a guy the Packers will definitely have their eye on. And again, speaking from the injury standpoint, you wonder, okay, where will Green Bay be with Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari, the two bookend tackles that have been so important to protecting Aaron Rodgers here over the years? And another guy to throw into the mix as well, David Irving, who's a pass rusher who made a splash last year at various times for the Cowboys. He's back from a four-game suspension now. This will be his first game of the 2017 season against here against the Green Bay Packers. So Packers have some have something to deal with in terms of this Cowboys pass rush.
Well, this pass rush has teeth, and I think there was a number of years there where Rod Marinelli did a good job of scheming things, working different stunts, making up for maybe a lack of depth and lack of, I don't want to say talent, but they just didn't have a 10, 15 sack type player. Well, now you're starting to see that, and you've seen Lawrence step up. To correct myself, he had 9 career sacks before this season. Boise State, 4th round pick in 2014. A really dynamic player his final 2 seasons at Boise State. Comes to the NFL, takes him a little bit of time, some injuries involved there as well, but really hit the ground running so far this season. Irving is probably more of that situational type pass rusher, but still gives them a lot of flexibility with how they want to use those guys. So I've been really impressed with it. I think Rod Marinelli is one of the best in the business. His 4-3 scheme and what they do, obviously it's well known. And then also to throw in there, Jalen Smith is back as well. Doesn't have a sack yet this season, but obviously a horrendous injury at the end of his career at Notre Dame. Yeah. Misses his entire rookie season, but he's been productive, and he started 4 games for him so far this year.
Yeah, the Cowboys used, I believe it was a 2nd-round pick on Jalen Smith, knowing that there was a good chance he was going to miss all of his rookie year in 2016, but they made that investment for the long term and for the future of their defense. Tell me what you know about the Cowboys' secondary, Wes, because I don't have a lot of the names at the tip of my tongue, yeah. but what I do know and what I remember from last year is it's a secondary that has some experience. It's not a whole bunch of newbies out there.
It does, and I mean, Orlando Scandrick is a guy that I don't think I was incredibly high on earlier in his career, but he reminds you of one of these type of defensive backs. I don't want to compare him to Tremont Williams because they're entirely different players, but he's a guy who has gotten better, I think, as he's gotten more experience and as he's gone on in his career. Again, has dealt with some injuries recently. Last year was a tough year for him, but is obviously in that picture. Byron Jones, I mean, is a younger player, but I think we all remember what he did at the NFL Scouting Combine a couple years ago, tested through the roof, made himself a 2nd-round pick. So a lot of depth there, and Chidobe Awuzie is one of the guys that I was highest on in this year's draft class. A ton of cornerbacks to pick from. He ends up landing with the Cowboys out of Colorado. A multitude, versatile player that they can use in different ways. So very flexible with what they can do with their defensive backs.
Yeah, and a defense that's going to have some pride on the line, I think, against Green Bay, not only because of what happened in the NFC divisional playoff game in January, but also giving up 35 points at home to the Rams this past Sunday when the offense had given that defense a 2-score lead early on in that ball game, and they were not able to hold it. Jared Goff and Todd Gurley and that suddenly explosive Rams offense was able to take advantage of some things without Sean Lee on the field and put up 35 points on the road. That's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do, and especially when you consider the issues that the Rams had a year ago. Offensively now have the number one scoring offense in the league. So obviously they did something right to go into AT&T Stadium and have that kind of success.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll call it a break for now and back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, I want to point out a story that you posted recently on our website, packers.com, and that was on second-year linebacker Blake Martinez. And one of the things that struck me about it was you hear the terms in other sports, a gym rat in basketball or a cage rat or something like that in baseball, a guy who's in the batting cage all the time. Blake Martinez is kind of that kind of guy as a football player in terms of, whether you want to call it a film junkie or whatever, but always working, studying, doing something to try to improve his game. And I think we're starting to see some of the benefits of that in a young player that the Packers invested a 4th-round pick in 2016.
Yeah, and I think everybody remembers the stories of him coming out of Stanford, the fact he doesn't eat desserts at all. He's addicted to Dota, the video game, which, and I consider myself to be a pretty big geek. I wasn't familiar with that at all, which is heavily strategy-based from what he was saying. Obviously, you've seen him in the locker room. I've seen him in the locker room. A lot of times he'll be kind of sitting in his locker, going through the iPad. Just a really strong work ethic. I think the Packers knew that from the day they drafted him. So now a year later, you flash forward, and just the way he's playing right now, they use a three-headed approach. I wrote that in the story. You know, Jake Ryan and Joe Thomas are very big parts of this defense as well. But the fact of the matter is Blake Martinez is the one getting the run right now with the nitro nickel defense, and the Packers are using that package a lot. So it's put a lot on him to not only have his communication down with his fellow inside backers, but now he's working with Morgan Burnett, he's working with Josh Jones, and just his ability to make all those pieces fit, and also really stepping up at that inside backer position because it puts more stress on him against the run. I think, you know, if you're the Packers, you couldn't be happier with the way that Blake Martinez has started this season.
Yeah, and I've seen, when I look at the film, I've seen a mixture of plays from Martinez. And what I mean by that is there are plays where those guys up front, Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, are really keeping the blockers off of him, right, and he gets a free run in there to chop down the running back on a running play. But there are also plays where he's shedding the blocks of some bigger guys, which maybe is something we didn't see as much of last year as a rookie. But just and it's not about brute strength or overpowering some guy that's bigger than him, but it's about being that extra half a step quicker to have that leverage to the edge where you can get off that block just a little bit faster and help to plug that hole. And I think his improvement in terms of a run defender has been evident when you look at the film.
Yeah, and I think that's also what's allowed him to be on the field more. I mean, last year he played about 52% of the plays when he was playing. There were three games he missed due to injury. And then this year it's been more around 72%, despite the fact he was getting evaluated for concussions. So that cost him about 10 plays, and he was later cleared. He didn't have one. So it's been a big jump for him this year coming into this lineup and having the impact he's had. But, you know, I was talking with Mike Daniels about this last week, and, you know, he said the day he walked in and he's asking him if he wants to watch film with him, we remember last year him talking about how he was kind of pulling on Aaron Rodgers' coattails a couple lockers down from him, trying to get as much information as he could. He really goes the extra mile in terms of trying to get that down, and as Daniel said, he has that warrior mentality once he gets on the field, and it fits well with the scheme.
Yeah, and let's not discount the level that Smarts plays in this as well,
because 100%.
He came in as a guy from Stanford and really absorbed everything he could as a rookie of Dom Capers' defense, which is not an easy thing to do, and really made himself prove that he belonged very early on, and now we're seeing kind of that steady incline, that arrow pointing up on a young defender.
Yeah, and he said that too. I mean, it's one thing to have, 4-4, 4-5 time when you're in the 40-yard dash, but you have to be able to mix the smarts with that. And I think that's what allows him to play fast, is that he is a lot more confident this year. And he also said, with the speed with Josh Jones, the instincts of a Morgan Burnett, it allows him to be more free in the decisions he's making out on the field and really gives him that edge. Now, a long way to go and a big test coming up this weekend against Zeke Elliott in this running game from the Cowboys. But the fact the Packers have been able to stem the tide without having Mike Daniels right now on that defensive front, I think says a lot about that entire 2016 draft class.
Yeah, and I think you need to start taking on Blake in that strategic video game. go up against him and see how you do.
I got to do some research first to figure out exactly what he's talking about.
All right, with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go, we've mentioned a couple times during the show that this is a playoff rematch from last January. That game at AT&T Stadium last winter will certainly go down as one of the most dramatic victories, playoff victories in Green Bay Packers history. So I'm curious, what do you remember most about it? There was a lot going on that day and a lot of drama right at the end, but what are your memories from that contest?
Fans will forever remember the Jared Cook catch along the sidelines, certainly the Mason Crosby field goals. The thing that stands out to me, though, is everything that happened afterwards, that locker room, the energy in there. And then also, and we can talk about the Cook play and more, but Mason Crosby, I wrote about this in the week after it. His sister-in-law, just been diagnosed with cancer at that time. He's wearing a bracelet on the field. Didn't even know whether or not that was permitted. I don't think he even asked. but if you go back and look at the film, you watch the photo galleries from Evan Siegel, you can see him wearing it. And he's from Texas, Georgetown, Texas, I believe.
Right.
He had a lot of family there. Him and his brother and his sister-in-law weren't there, but he did have a lot of family there. How emotional it was for him going through that game, that's the thing that number one is always going to stand out to me, because it was as clutch a performance as it gets for a player.
Yeah, and when I think about our view in the press box of those Mason Crosby field goals, just to give the fans an idea, we're actually in the end zone where that goalpost is where Crosby is kicking, but we're off to the side a little bit. So watching it live, you don't exactly have a very good angle as to where the ball is going. And what I remember about the first long one, the 56-yarder, which when Crosby first kicked it, it leaked out to the right a little bit and then kind of came back in.
It was a curveball.
You could see the fans in that end zone down below us where we were in the press box. They started to stand up and cheer when they saw it start to leak out to the right, and then it curved back, and then they got quiet and sat back down. So they were sort of telling us, you know, in the press box what they were seeing and reacting to. And so I always remember those types of moments. And if there's another play other than the Jared Cook one, obviously that stands out to me. It was that interception by Micah Hyde, which really was, I thought, a play that stemmed the tide at the moment where the Cowboys seemed to be having all this momentum. And eventually, obviously, they did come back and tie the game after the Packers had built a big lead. But for the time being, that interception was one that kept the Packers in the lead. It took points off the board because the Cowboys were down there in the red zone, or at least close to it. And as we talked yesterday, we saw Micah Hyde get two more interceptions for the Buffalo Bills down in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I you could give us a three-hour unscripted, and I still wouldn't find a way to fill it all. I mean, there's so many things with Micah Hyde. You could go back and look at his career with the Packers of how he stepped up. I was trying to say I would still run over for time, but on that particular play, I think if you wanted to talk about one situation that perfectly embodied who he was as a player and what he did on the field in terms of his instincts, that really was it. And he played a big role for them last season. So yeah, you're right. That was a great play by him.
Yeah. The drama of how these playoff games wrap up, you know, the Packers get the ball with hardly any time left, and you think the game's going to overtime, and Aaron Rodgers pulls it out.
That's crazy.
So maybe it'll be on Mason Crosby's foot again. Yeah. With that, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.